It's interesting that when we hear the word test tube baby, we oftentimes associate, and I think science fiction, kind of that, separate from us, not really connected with what we understand, with life, something we don't want to deal with very much because it brings up all kinds of issues. And that is very true. It does bring up all kind of issues. Okay, let's try one more. What about when you hear the phrase, this is the first word that pops into your head when you hear the phrase, surrogate mother. First, baby M.
Money.
Money.
Right.
What else? First word.
Pain.
Pain.
Womb for rent.
Womb for rent.
I guess traitor.
Traitor.
Ownership.
It's an interesting one. We'll get back to that one.
Yeah.
Ownership.
Conflict.
Conflicts, okay.
Heartache.
Heartache. Anything else?
Will the child be a normal child when it is born is what I'm...
Okay, that's the first kind of thing that comes into your head when you think about surrogate mothering. Okay. Again, a topic that carries with it all kinds of issues. I mean, each one of you, as you said your word or phrase, carried with you a whole set of values and beliefs that you have about life and creation. And so that when you hear those words, or you encounter, even more importantly, women or couples who have been through the process of either surrogate mothering or infertility, or you hear about the story of Baby M or Mary Beth Whitehead, that all kinds of issues that you have and beliefs that you have focus as you read or try to digest what's happening within that. That's what we call an ethical dilemma. That's what moves us towards having conflict. Is this acceptable or not? Is this something that we want to see happen in our society? On one hand, you're dealing with people who can have the opportunity to have a child. And on the other hand, you're in the process of creating life outside of what we normally understand the creation of life to be. And that really scares us, and in some ways it should in our society. And we're going to do some talking about that this afternoon. However, before we talk specifically about those two issues, and then we're going to get through this, halfway through, I'm going to give you an opportunity to grapple with a couple of cases. One around the issue of a surrogate mother, and one around the issue of in vitro fertilization, which is the quote, technical name for test tube babies. And that's the name that I will use, is in vitro fertilization. One of the issues, though, and I know a lot of you can't see this, but one of the things I want to donate to Holden is some decent magic markers, because this is impossible. I just want to go through this again. Whenever we're dealing with ethical issues, there are two sets of pieces that we need to keep in mind, and particularly from the perspective of those of us who come out of Christianity. And not that some of these aren't true in other religions, but this is how we're putting it together. Under medical ethics, the five key issues that we look for are, as I said before, informed consent, a situation in which people should know everything there is to know about the situation. And of course, in all the issues that we're talking about, there's a whole level of uncertainty that people will never know questions about. For instance, will the child be normal? You know, what will happen 20 years from now when the child finds out that my mother, the egg came from this woman, but this woman has raised me? What are the issues related to that? Issues that we're going to talk about today, what happens when you freeze a fertilized egg and the couple gets divorced? Who gets custody? It's a big one. It's a big one. We're going to talk about that. Confidentiality. Who knows who's what? With the whole issue of AIDS related to this, where does the egg come from? Where does the sperm come from? All of those issues are tied into it. Benefit-risk ratio. In these situations, is a surrogate mother told that by the end of the pregnancy, she will have an option to decide whether she can keep the baby or not? Is that clearly defined? Etc. So she needs to look at that. Right to refuse treatment is another one that we're actually, tomorrow's session will focus a lot on right to refuse treatment around pregnancy. And justice, equal treatment to all. Who has access in our country to in vitro fertilization? Who can hire a surrogate mother to have a baby for them? You know, where is that technology? Who is that technology really accessible to? Those are some of the issues we need to look at. And from a Christian perspective, there are five key issues that we always need to keep in mind when we're struggling with these. One is the importance of human life. That's always been a key kind of post for Christianity. Respect for others. People's ability to be different, to make their own decisions, but be respectful of their human dignity. Responsibility towards humanity and the rest of creation. Okay, so you don't want in vitro fertilization. What are you doing about those infertile couples that have a lot of pain and anxiety as they sit through your church service with 10,000 kids running around them with the expectation that a normal family includes children? You know, what does that mean? We need to look at that. Accountability to God. We always have to remember that in the midst of any decision that we make, we are in relationship with God. And we have to consider that relationship in the process of making decisions. And the fifth one is the freedom of the gospel. That in the midst of all of that, there are no easy answers to any of these questions. And the freedom of the gospel is that we are loved and cared for and forgiven regardless of what we decide to do in these situations. So those are all the things that we need to kind of keep bunched up in our head as we look at this particular issue. What I want to talk about first, any questions about that? I'm repeating it, unfortunately, because I was told that these have to be five separate sessions as if a hiker walked off the trail and had never been here before. So I'm trying to get through that quickly. But I want people to keep that in mind when you think about these cases and kind of struggle through with them. All right, before I get started specifically about some of the technical issues I want to talk about, I want to talk about infertility. Somebody mentioned it when I said test tube babies, surrogate mothering. People said infertility. It's important for us to talk about infertility because it's an issue as to why some of the technology is happening the way it is and what we're doing with it within our society. Now, there are a lot of reasons why people are infertile, and some has to do with the environment, toxic products. There's a lot of infertility happening within our culture now due to people's workplace, both male and female, asbestos. There's a whole series of toxic chemicals that are impacting fertility in our particular population and in most populations in what we call, quote, developed countries. Infections from sexually transmitted diseases. We're seeing a huge number of cases of infertility due to that. It's one of the reasons why it's so crucial that teenagers get treated with sexually transmitted diseases right away, because many of those diseases are not asymptomatic and continue and cause infertility. Infections from intrauterine devices that go undetected or unused is another cause for infertility. In some cases, we think we're not sure, possibly delayed childbirth. The evidence is kind of topsy-turvy in that, and it's very political. It's a very political discussion because it has to do with women's kind of ability to make a decision at another time in their life. But it's certainly a key factor we need to look at. One of the issues that happens in infertility is that the values in our society are really focused on if you get married, you have children. Therefore, there are many couples who find themselves in a situation of either the male or the female being infertile, or maybe both combined together, who feel like there is no support for them in a society to be without a child. That's one issue that we have. If you listen to infertile couples, and as I've sat in groups listening to them, I mean, one of the issues they talk about, it's interesting enough, they bring up church a lot. Because going to church and being in a service where there are a lot of kids around and kind of the church is focused on family is one of the most difficult places for infertile couples to be. I think that's an interesting one. We won't spend a lot of time, but just kind of click that in the back of your head. But the other issue is in our society, we have an incredibly strong value related to your ability to have your own child. There's a really strong relationship between having your own child and continuing kind of your particular brand of family, name, genes, etc. And therefore, it is not unusual that people will be willing to go to all lengths to have children. And that's really what's pushed forward a lot of this technology, is that in many cases, infertile couples will pay anything to have a baby, will do anything to have a baby. One of the questions I think we as a society have got to ask, and frankly we as a church have got to ask, is do we value children because they are related to an individual couple, or do we value children because they are an important part of who we are as community? I think that's a bigger question that we need to struggle with. So in all the discussion, the reason I lay this out is because so often in the discussion about in vitro fertilization and surrogate mothering, we target the infertile couple. And what I want to be very clear about is, as we struggle through these issues, we need to see the infertile couple as people who are in a great deal of pain, and not put a lot of blame on them, but understand the context out of which they come and some of the struggles that they're going through, and that we, in fact, as a society, are responsible, equally responsible, for some of the issues that they are dealing with. And therefore, I want to lay that out, because it's sometimes very easy to go after people like that and say, you're just, you know, you'll do anything, you'll pay any money, and if you're wealthy, you'll buy a baby. And the issue is much more societal. It's much more an issue of what's happening within our society than it is of an individual couple. Okay, so that kind of is the groundwork there. There are three basic ways that technology has moved in terms of the issue of creating human beings. The first started with artificial insemination. Now, artificial insemination is a very easy process. It's a matter of taking the sperm, usually from a sperm bank. In some cases, it can be the sperm from somebody who you maybe know, or an anonymous donor. There are a whole variety of ways, but you take the sperm, it gets inserted into the vagina, up through the uterus, and it connects with the egg and fertilizes it. Now, originally, interesting enough, when artificial insemination started appearing on the scene, it was met with horror. In fact, in most of these cases, there are four systems. There are four emotions that a culture goes through. The first is horror. The second is a negative feeling. The third is an evaluation, and the fourth is acceptance. We are now at the fourth level with artificial insemination. For the most part, it's a very simple procedure. It's done by thousands of people, and it's happening across the country. So it's not something that we've spent a lot of time talking about. And of course, the AIDS issue has really brought into question some issues around artificial insemination because of the donor question. And who does somebody have AIDS who's donating sperm, et cetera. So that was kind of the first level of technology. The second level had to do with surrogate mothers. Now, surrogate mothers are nothing new. In fact, Deanne gave me a book the other day. I wonder if I brought it with me, which is the story of a Korean woman who found out that she was, when she was about 25, that she had another mother who had been a surrogate mother. Her parents could not have children. And in Korea, apparently, it's very acceptable. In fact, there's a name called a seed receiver. The translation is seed receiver, where you get a surrogate mother, you go out, find a woman, pay her, and the husband has sex with that woman. And in the previous to the technology, now the sperm can be injected into the woman, and they had the baby. And she found out that she had two mothers. So it's not a new tradition. It's also a tradition in which it's always included what two populations. Who are the women, who are the couples who are employing the surrogate mother? They come from wealthy families. And who are the surrogates? Poor women. It's an issue around surrogate mothering that we have got to accept as a part of it. And we need to, when you do your case study, I want you to keep that in mind. For the most part, the largest percentage of women who are surrogate mothers are women who come from lower income families. And while many of them choose to be surrogate mothers because they enjoy pregnancy and they want to give of themselves and allow another couple to be happy and to have children, for the most part, economics always plays a key part in the decision for a surrogate mother. Now, there are a lot of different ways that a surrogate mother can function, and you just need to understand this from a technological point of view. A surrogate mother can have artificial insemination. In other words, a donor sperm can be taken from the sperm bank, it can be injected into the surrogate mother, her egg and that sperm come together, she carries the baby for 9 months and delivers it and hands it over. Or the sperm from the father can be injected into the surrogate mother, and the egg and those, that sperm comes together, and that becomes the pregnancy. Or an egg can be taken from the mother, because maybe for some reason her uterus can't handle or hold a pregnancy. The sperm from a father, they can be taken, put together and fertilized, and implanted in the surrogate mother. Okay, see all of the incredible array of possibilities we're talking here in terms of human relationships. I mean, it's endless. Or you could have the egg from the mother, from the woman who's hiring the surrogate, and donor sperm from the sperm bank, and those can be put together and implanted into the surrogate mother. So the question then becomes, whose kid is it? In our world of technology, we are very used to having, and our value is focused on children belonging to those whose genes connect. In many cases, that's basically what one of our bottom line values are. In the case of a surrogate mother, you're dealing with a whole other different set of regulations. Now, the other issue in our society that you need to remember is that we don't allow people to sell babies. It's illegal in every state in this country to sell a baby. And yet the question comes, is surrogate mothering buying a baby? It usually costs about $30,000. $10,000 goes to the mother, the surrogate mother. $10,000 goes to the agency, and about $10,000 for medical expenses. So it's about a $30,000 procedure. And as I said, many women are motivated by the question and issue of economics. The question, however, comes, and there have been a lot of cases, you're going to get a chance to look at those, what happens when the baby is born and the mother doesn't want to give it up? The woman who's pregnant, who's carried the baby, doesn't want to give it up. Whose baby is it? Say, for instance, the baby is the egg of the woman who hired the surrogate mother and the sperm of the man who hired the surrogate mother, fertilized and then implanted in the surrogate mother. Whose child is it in that process? The woman who carried, the gestational mother, as we call it, or is it the one who the egg and the sperm belong to? See, suddenly we're mixed in a whole level of legal issues that we haven't even begun to deal with in terms of society. And from an ethical point of view, we've done none of it, and from the church's point of view, we ignore it. And we pretend it doesn't happen. And periodically in our congregations, somebody does it very quietly. Maybe they tell the minister, maybe they don't, and suddenly there's a kid. We adopted. You know, it happens, and yet we haven't dealt with some of the real issues related to it. The other issue, and there was a case a number of years ago, was where a woman was a surrogate mother, and the baby was born disabled. And the father, the couple who had employed this woman, refused to take the child and said that they were unwilling, because of some things that they felt she had done in her pregnancy, that they were unwilling to accept the responsibility of this child. It was his sperm, the surrogate mother's egg. Who's responsible for that child in the end? Whose responsibility is that child? The problem is, in this case, that again, we have not really dealt with the issue of what it means for us as a society to struggle with the question of surrogate mothering. One of the last things I want to leave you with around that before I go to in vitro and then we're going to move to the case studies is the last paragraph of a article written by Elizabeth Bettenhausen, who's a Lutheran theologian, around surrogate mothering, and she's opposed to it, but she has an interesting last statement that I think is one to look at and to kind of think about when you go through the process. Calling the practice of breeding or woman for rent or egg farm or embryo house seems harsh for ears conditioned to hear motherhood and apple pie together, but such demystifying is essential to prevent the moral degradation of motherhood itself. Economic need should never be a reason for giving up a child or for maternity itself. To alienate from the woman the child of her labor is to reduce women and children to commodities. A surrogate motherhood business in Kansas is called the Hagar Institute. The irony of this is hidden until we recall that Hagar, the slave, looked with contempt upon those who used her. So there's a whole nother way of looking at this. And in some ways, the issue of surrogate mothering has two groups of people struggling who are opposed to it. There are many who accept it. But on one hand, you have people who basically believe, from a theological point of view, that when we were created, the process of creation was that the man and woman would come together, they would make some kind of commitment. We know that it's marriage today. And they would have intercourse, and the egg and seed would come together, and a child would be produced. There are some people who say it's unacceptable to develop any other kind of system for surrogate, for the bringing about of children. The other line is the line that Elizabeth follows, which relates to the issue of the question of women's rights. And are we going to find more and more wealthy couples going to women who are low income, and even going to women in other countries who are low income to try to find women to be surrogates? Is that an acceptable way for us to be as a society? We need to struggle with it. It's not easily answered, because there are other cases in which people have had children from surrogate mothers, and it's turned out to be very, very fruitful and very healthy for both the surrogate mother and the couple. That's the issue, though. What happens in the exploitation process? Okay, that surrogate mother, are there questions about that before I move on to in vitro? I'm going through a lot of information fast, I realize, but I want to give you an opportunity to do some talking among yourselves. So are there questions? Does it make sense what we're talking about? Any? Okay, ready to move on to in vitro. Okay, in vitro fertilization is simply, the technology is pretty incredible, where an egg is taken, a sperm is taken, both from outside the body, put together, and this is where you get the test tube, fertilized, and then implanted back into the uterus, or into a uterus. Now, in many cases, and the same system that I gave you of pot variations, donor sperm, donor egg, mother's egg, father's sperm, mother's egg, donor sperm, all those variations can occur also in vitro fertilization. It works about 20% of the time. It costs about $5,000 per time. And I know some couples who've been through it 4 or 5 times, so we're talking $20,000, $25,000. And in many cases, they're implanting a number of embryos into the uterus to make sure that one comes. Develops, etc. However, what's occurred in the situation is, as they get better, we now have the problem of increased number of eggs that become attached to the uterus. And so now what some of these women are facing is abortion, because not all of those fertilized eggs can stay in the uterus if you want one to survive. So a woman may have 4 implanted. In fact, there was just a case recently, 4 implanted. 4 of them may, in fact, attach themselves to this and start to grow. And the physician will say to her, if you want to save even one, you have to abort 3. So suddenly, this couple who's never been able to get pregnant, who looks at abortion in a very painful way because they see abortion as those kids that they can't get, is faced with abortion herself, in order to save the life of one. Now, it's not called abortion. Can I tell you what the term is for it? It's called pregnancy reduction. It hasn't even become the forum on which there's been a lot of discussion. But it happens all the time, and it's really causing some major problems. So these are some of the issues that take place. Okay, real quickly, some of the issues that are happening. One is, not only can we put that egg and sperm together now in the test tube, but now if you want to, you don't have to have it implanted right away. You can freeze it and wait. In fact, there was recently a case where the embryo was split. It was implanted, so you had twins. One was frozen, one was implanted. They had that baby. A year later, they implanted the second one, had that baby, who were twins but a year apart in age. That's the kind of technology that we're talking about. Who knows what that is going to produce in terms of that particular family? Or the case of of a couples who decide, they say, well, I don't want to be pregnant right now, but I'm a little nervous that my eggs might get old, you know, et cetera, or might have an infection. So what I'm going to do is let's go through this process and freeze our eggs, freeze the fertilized eggs, and then we'll do it. In fact, there was a case, Ingrid brought that up, that I had forgotten about in Australia where the couple died, and they had the frozen fertilized eggs, and there was a big, the couple were very wealthy, and there was a big fight, court case over who had control of the fertilized eggs, because did they inherit all the wealth? The fertilized eggs? Who was responsible? I mean, you know, this is the kind of stuff, when you said science fiction, this is the kind of stuff 10 years ago we read about in the science fiction books. And now it's a reality. It's happening almost every day in major medical centers in this country. Or the question comes, so the couple fertilizes their egg, then they get divorced. Who gets custody of the egg? You know, you got the house, you got the boat, you got the egg. Who gets custody? So this is what, there was a panel done, a panel of doctors who did, and they said, well, this is what we would do if we were asked this question. What we would do is we would split the egg, we'd implant half in the ex-wife, and she could have a baby. Then we'd plant the other half in the surrogate mother that the ex-husband hired. She could have a baby. These would be twins with two different gestational mothers, and yet they'd be twins. You know, there's all kinds of things that, you know, make people really nervous. And yet, there are also hundreds of couples who have rejoiced in the birth of a child that they never could have had if the technology weren't there. And their lives have been enriched. Yet the question still remains, what do we do with all these eggs? And if you have an egg on a dish and you move that egg and it dies, what does that mean? Have you just killed a human being? What happens when you transport that egg? Who's responsible for that human life? I mean, there are big court cases on transporting the egg from one clinic to the next. You know, we're talking a technology that has gone far beyond what our ethical understanding and relationships are. And so suddenly what you find a lot of us doing, both in the church and the medical community, is running our butts off trying to catch up and make some rules to go along with it. Because currently the rules are real limited. Yeah.
And how about implantation?
Certainly the technology. You know, I mean, there's no question in my mind that the technology couldn't be done. I mean, it's not currently being done, but it's being worked on. Yes, I know. I wasn't going to kind of totally freak people out here. I figured we'd start with the basics and see where we got with that. No, I mean, you're absolutely right. The other question is, this can be used to decide they now can take one sperm, one lone sperm, and you know it takes thousands to get an egg. They can take one lone sperm and connect it to one lone egg and fertilize that egg. They're currently doing it. What that means is they can determine sex. They can determine genes. And suddenly we're talking about a whole new ball game related to who gets to be born and who doesn't. And what kind of race are we going to have and be? So that's a whole nother issue that is related to this. So there's that kind of whole side of the question of in vitro fertilization, surrogate mothering. The other side is the very human side of people who have very loving families and the technology has finally allowed them to have children. That's an important issue. Yes. It's just become an issue. Artificial insemination currently is being used for singles. There are single women who are being artificially inseminated. Surrogate mothering, the same thing is true. In vitro fertilization, up until now, has primarily been limited to married couples. But frankly, there's no reason why, knowing the other trends in society, why that wouldn't change and open up. I mean, that's a question. Justice, equal treatment. I mean, that's one of the premises of medicine, and is medicine saying that you have to be married to have a child? You know, I mean, that there's a whole value. I mean, we have some values in our church related to that possibly, but we don't talk about them very much, so nobody would know that. Was there a hand over here? Something? I didn't. I sat out of the corner.
The whole thing that was real popular a few years ago, cloning, that's taking a cell from any part of the body.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't know a lot of the research that's being done in that. It relates to this in that, you know, the issue, you need to understand the incredible technology of taking one sperm and one egg and putting it together. Yeah. Because in doing that, you can, you actually can design and decide what that fertilized egg is going to be. The other question is, what if the fertilized egg, can you do testing on the fertilized egg to check out for disabilities, problems with the fertilized egg? In some states, it's illegal. Because it's illegal to do any testing or experimentation on fetuses or fertilized eggs. In other words, there's a whole, it doesn't say fertilized egg, but it covers that. Therefore, a physician may be implanting a child with numerous disabilities and problems, and maybe even life-threatening disease, into a woman who, you know, I mean, the whole process. Do you see what I'm saying? It just becomes greater and greater as a problem. And there's certainly a lot of people, and I would be remiss if I didn't say this, a lot of people who think back to Hitler Germany and the experimentations that he was doing with the Jews in relationship to what's happening with the technology. People say, what if Hitler had had this technology? What if? And my, you know, one of the issues I think that we need to play with is, what if is a good question, and the other question is, we always assume there will never be another Hitler. And I don't think we can make that assumption. The other problem is that a lot of us don't pay any attention to it. We let the technology go along. And as an institution, I mean, in the church, it's barely talked about, except some medical ethicists who are in some university setting kind of deal with it. But other than that, if your family is dealing with it on a personal level because someone in your family is going through in vitro fertilization or using a surrogate mother, then maybe you'll deal with it. But chances are you don't go to your church or your minister to talk about it, because in many cases, they don't understand the process. Therefore, the technology is moving forward without a lot of theological or faith input. And that's what we really need to be doing. Okay, we're going to move to case studies. Well, I've got two of them I want you to do, but quick question. Right. I don't think they're promoting. I think the doctors are making decisions that they think relate to what's the healthiest product we can have at the end. And if they can do multiple births, you know, in some cases you're talking about seven, you know, actually one I just was talking to someone about was six. If she wanted two to survive, she had to abort four. So, no, there are multiple births, and I don't think most physicians, you're talking infertility physicians who deal with people daily who want kids. So their job is to make sure that those people have kids. So for the most part, those are physicians who are really focused on getting as many healthy babies as they can. So I don't feel like, at least that's not the sense. This is one of the first cases, you mean of the twins being born a year apart? It's one of the first cases. Well, it's possible in that it's been done. So once it's been done, you know, I mean, it's going to move. We're talking hundreds now of in vitro fertilization procedures taking place across the country and across the world. So it just depends. I don't know why that couple chose to do that, quite frankly. It was, you know, but who's to account? Right. No, I think it's happening in a few places. That also reminds me of just a real quick thing I want to say about genetic engineering. Genentech, which is one of the organizations, one of the companies that is out that's doing some of the genetic engineering, was able to fully finance its entire company without one product, without ever producing one product, because of the incredible view of Wall Street towards genetic engineering and how profitable they felt it would be in the near future. Usually it's infertility drugs, because infertility drugs can frequently produce multiple pregnancies. Right, yes. No, that's the other place where pregnancy reduction, exactly. It's going on. It's been going on for a long time. A lot of docs don't talk about it. It's very quietly done, because it's a field in which, again, you're dealing with people who want kids, and now you have to abort. So it's a struggle. Okay, let me give you the first case study, and I want you to be able to try to work through two of these. So let me move you through. The first one is surrogate mothering, and I'm going to break you into small groups. Jane is a mother of three children. She's divorced and struggling economically to keep her family intact. She loves being pregnant and having babies and is now considering being a surrogate mother. The pay is good. It's $1,000 plus medical care. She gets pregnant from the father's sperm. It's artificially inseminated. The couple that is hiring her are both professionals, a lawyer and a college professor. And Jane, even about 2 months, she's been going along fine. She's ready to give it up. But about a month before delivery, she begins to question whether she's going to be able to give this child up. So she walks into delivery with that kind of doubt in her mind. She gives birth and gives the child to the couple. Then, 3 days later after birth, she wants the baby back. During those 3 days, she was unable to sleep, unable to eat, and is becoming very, very depressed because she feels incredibly guilty about giving up her child. These are the questions. Should Mary have the right to keep her baby? If not, whose baby should it be? Should we as a society accept surrogate mothering as a reasonable way for a couple, an infertile couple, to have a child? And what are some of the ethical dilemmas that you see in this particular situation? And of course, the fourth one that I always ask is, if Mary were a member of your congregation and you found out she was a surrogate mother, how would your congregation deal with her? Okay? Get in groups of about 3 or 4, real quick, right where you are, and discuss that case.
Where did the egg and sperm come from?
The sperm is from the father who paid her. The egg is from Mary, the surrogate mother.
She only got paid $1,000?
No, $10. Right. No, I'm sorry. She got paid $10,000. That's in a bank. She hasn't used it yet. Is it the one who the egg and the sperm belong to? See, suddenly we're mixed in a whole level of legal issues that we haven't even begun to deal with in terms of society. And from an ethical point of view, we've done none of it. And from the church's point of view, we ignore it. And we pretend it doesn't happen. And periodically in our congregations, somebody does it very quietly. Maybe they tell the minister, maybe they don't, and suddenly there's a kid. We adopted. You know, it happens, and yet we haven't dealt with some of the real issues related to it. The other issue, and there was a case a number of years ago, was where a woman was a surrogate mother and the baby was born disabled. And the couple who had employed this woman refused to take the child and said that they were unwilling, because of some things that they felt she had done in her pregnancy, that they were unwilling to accept the responsibility of this child. It was his sperm, the surrogate mother's egg. Who's responsible for that child in the end? Whose responsibility is that child? The problem is, in this case, that, again, we have not really dealt with the issue of what it means for us as a society to struggle with the question of surrogate mothering. One of the last things I want to leave you with around that, before I go to in vitro and then we're going to move to the case studies, is the last paragraph of an article written by Elizabeth Bettenhausen, who's a Lutheran theologian, around surrogate mothering. And she's opposed to it, but she has an interesting last statement that I think is one to look at and to kind of think about when you go through the process. Calling the practice of breeding, or woman for rent, or egg farm, or embryo house, seems harsh for ears conditioned to hear motherhood and apple pie together. But such demystifying is essential to prevent the moral degradation of motherhood itself. Economic need should never be a reason for giving up a child or for maternity itself. To alienate from the woman the child of her labor is to reduce women and children to commodities. A surrogate motherhood business in Kansas is called the Hagar Institute. The irony of this is hidden until we recall that Hagar, the slave, looked with contempt upon those who used her. So there's a whole nother way of looking at this. And in some ways, the issue of surrogate mothering has two groups of people struggling who are opposed to it. There are many who accept it. But on one hand, you have people who basically believe, from a theological point of view, that when we were created, the process of creation was that the man and woman would come together, they would make some kind of commitment, we know that it's marriage today, and they would have intercourse, and the egg and seed would come together, and a child would be produced. There are some people who say it's unacceptable to develop any other kind of system for surrogate, for the bringing about of children. The other line is the line that Elizabeth follows, which relates to the issue of the question of women's rights. And are we going to find more and more wealthy couples going to women who are low income, and even going to women in other countries who are low income, to try to find women to be surrogates? Is that an acceptable way for us to be as a society? We need to struggle with it. It's not easily answered, because there are other cases in which people have had children from surrogate mothers, and it's turned out to be very, very fruitful and very healthy for both the surrogate mother and the couple. That's the issue, though. What happens in the exploitation process? Okay, that surrogate mother, are there questions about that before I move on to in vitro? I'm going through a lot of information fast, I realize, but I want to give you an opportunity to do some talking among yourselves. So are there questions? Does it make sense what we're talking about? Any? Okay. Ready to move on to in vitro. Okay, in vitro fertilization is simply, the technology is pretty incredible, where an egg is taken, a sperm is taken, both from outside the body, put together, and this is where you get the test tube, fertilized, and then implanted back into the uterus or into a uterus. Now, in many cases, and the same system that I gave you of pot variations, donor sperm, donor egg, mother's egg, father's sperm, mother's egg, donor sperm, all those variations can occur also in vitro fertilization. It works about 20% of the time. It costs about $5,000 per time. And it can, I know some couples who've been through it four or five times, so we're talking $20,000, $25,000. And in many cases, they're implanting a number of embryos into the uterus to make sure that one comes. Develops, etc. However, what's occurred in the situation is, as they get better, we now have the problem of increased number of eggs that become attached to the uterus. And so now what some of these women are facing is abortion, because not all of those fertilized eggs can stay in the uterus if you want one to survive. So a woman may have four implanted. In fact, there was just a case recently, four implanted. Four of them may, in fact, attach themselves to this and start to grow. And the physician will say to her, if you want to save even one, you have to abort three. So suddenly, this couple who's never been able to get pregnant, who looks at abortion in a very painful way because they see abortion as those kids that they can't get, is faced with abortion herself, in order to save the life of one. Now, it's not called abortion. Can I tell you what the term is for it? It's called pregnancy reduction. It hasn't even become the forum on which there's been a lot of discussion, but it happens all the time, and it's really causing some major problems. So these are some of the issues that take place. Okay, real quickly, some of the issues that are happening. One is, not only can we put that egg and sperm together now in the test tube, but now if you want to, you don't have to have it implanted right away. You can freeze it and wait. In fact, there was recently a case where the embryo was split. It was implanted, so you had twins. One was frozen, one was implanted. They had that baby. A year later, they implanted the second one, had that baby, who were twins but a year apart in age. That's the kind of technology that we're talking about. Who knows what that is going to produce in terms of that particular family? Or the case of a couples who decide, they say, well, I don't want to be pregnant right now, but I'm a little nervous that my eggs might get old, et cetera, or might have an infection. So what I'm going to do is, let's go through this process and freeze the fertilized eggs, and then we'll do it. In fact, there was a case, Ingrid brought that up, that I had forgotten about in Australia, where the couple died, and they had the frozen fertilized eggs, and the couple were very wealthy, and there was a big fight, court case, over who had control of the fertilized eggs, because they, did they inherit all the wealth? The fertilized eggs? Who was responsible? I mean, you know, this is the kind of stuff, when you said science fiction, this is the kind of stuff 10 years ago we read about in the science fiction books. And now it's a reality. It's happening almost every day in major medical centers in this country. Or the question comes, so the couple fertilizes their egg, then they get divorced. Who gets custody of the egg? You know, you got the house, you got the boat, you got the egg. Who gets custody? So this is what, there was a panel done, a panel of doctors who did, and they said, well, this is what we would do if we were asked this question. What we would do is we would split the egg, we'd implant half in the ex-wife, and she could have a baby. Then we'd plant the other half in the surrogate mother that the ex-husband hired. She could have a baby. These would be twins with two different gestational mothers, and yet they'd be twins. You know, there's all kinds of things that, you know, make people really nervous. And yet, there are also hundreds of couples who have rejoiced in the birth of a child that they never could have had if the technology weren't there. And their lives have been enriched. Yet the question still remains, what do we do with all these eggs? And if you have an egg on a dish and you move that egg and it dies, what does that mean? Have you just killed a human being? What happens when you transport that egg? Who's responsible for that human life? I mean, there are big court cases on transporting the egg from one clinic to the next. You know, we're talking a technology that has gone far beyond what our ethical understanding and relationships are. And so suddenly what you find a lot of us doing, both in the church and the medical community, is running our butts off trying to catch up and make some rules to go along with it. Because currently the rules are real limited. Yeah, certainly the technology, you know, I mean, there's no question in my mind that the technology couldn't be done. I mean, it's not currently being done, but it's being worked on. Yes, I know. I wasn't going to kind of totally freak people out here. I figured we'd start with the basics and see where we got with that. No, I mean, you're absolutely right. The other question is, this can be used to decide they now can take one sperm, one lone sperm, and you know, it takes thousands to get an egg. They can take one lone sperm and connect it to one lone egg and fertilize that egg. They're currently doing it. What that means is they can determine sex. They can determine genes. And suddenly we're talking about a whole new ball game related to who gets to be born and who doesn't. And what kind of race are we going to have and be? So that's a whole nother issue that is related to this. So there's that kind of whole side of the question of in vitro fertilization, surrogate mothering. The other side is the very human side of people who have very loving families and the technology has finally allowed them to have children. That's an important issue. Yes. That's right. It's just become an issue. Artificial insemination currently is being used for singles. There are single women who are being artificially inseminated. Surrogate mothering, the same thing is true. In vitro fertilization up until now has primarily been limited to married couples, but frankly, there's no reason why, knowing the other trends in society, why that wouldn't change and open up. I mean, that's a question. Justice, equal treatment. I mean, that's one of the premises of medicine, and is medicine saying that you have to be married to have a child? You know, I mean, that there's a whole value. I mean, we have some values in our church related to that possibly, but we don't talk about them very much, so nobody would know that. Was there a hand over here? Something? I didn't. It's out of course.
That is the whole thing that was real popular a few years ago, cloning. That's taking a cell from any part of a body.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't know a lot of the research that's being done in that. It relates to this in that... you know, the issue, you need to understand the incredible technology of taking one sperm and one egg and putting it together. Yeah. Because in doing that, you can, you actually can design and decide what that fertilized egg is going to be.